Now listen up.
Coming to you from a toddler's playroom in the Lone Star State. Welcome to Health, Wealth, and a Taste of History, where we ramble and you listen. Bringing you weird history, food science, and the facts you didn't know you needed. Here are your hosts, Bob and Tom.
Hi, historians. Boy, do we have a treat for y'all today. Tom took the episode off, but we're going to have a very special guest with us that's visiting from beyond the grave. This gentleman lived an absolutely crazy life with all kinds of twists and turns. Now, this episode is going to be just a little bit different from what you're probably used to. It's going to be in somewhat of an interview format, but we're not going to give away the identity of our special guest until the very end. We'll incorporate some clues as we go along the way to help you try and guess who it is. Let's see if you can figure out who it is by the end of the episode. So without any further ado, let's welcome our guest. Sir, could you start off by telling us a little bit about your life and how you were raised?
Firstly, let me say it's a privilege to be here with you today, Robert.
Oh, please, call me Bob. Also, I must say, your mustache is absolutely marvelous. Truly, I am impressed.
All right then, Bob. Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to have a conversation with you here today. I need this respite from the afterlife, as it was getting a bit boring spending all of my time with Abe Lincoln. Well, how do I start? I was born a time before the Civil War in a little township known as Tyrone, Michigan. My father, who was a strong man, hailed from Massachusetts and was descended from a family of ferry operators. My mother was his second wife, and I was one of 17 siblings, 6 from my father's first marriage.
17, wow, that's a lot.
I was brought up in an incredibly strict religious household. We were an incredibly close community. My father tithed heavily and often pledged substantial sums to other members of the congregation for their business needs. While I was a young lad, I wasn't always of the best health. I often held fevers and other ailments. My parents did not trust or believe in public education. They believed that a religious education in the Lord was more proper for our family. The only time I spent in public education was from ages 9 to 11. After this brief time spent out of the home, I left my schooling to work in my father's broom factory, sorting brooms. We never needed for brooms in the home to do chores and keep our household very clean. On one occasion, I even traded away a few brooms to one of my friends for a deck of cards in order to play Beggar My Neighbor with my brother.
I've never heard of that game. Can you explain it just a little bit?
Well, Bob, it's a hoot. It is a very similar game to what you all call War or Egyptian Rat Screw now. The object is to win the whole deck of cards. Royals and aces are considered penalties that must be paid by the opposing player. For example, an ace costs 4 cards, a king costs 3, a queen 2, and a prince 1. If while paying the penalty, your opponent plays a royal or ace, then the penalty transfers to you. It really is a fun game, and we used to play for hours and hours. We should try it sometime, Bob.
Absolutely, that sounds like a lot of fun. So, since you brought up growing up in a very strict religious home, what was that like?
It was an odd time. My parents believed that Christ was to be reborn during that time. This is partly what led to them not believing in us receiving a formal education, as they believed it to be unnecessary. We spent long times during the day praying, and my parents, or older siblings, would often read to us from the Bible. A great many teachings from my childhood stuck with me and shaped who I became.
So, can you tell us who was right about the afterlife?
Well, Bob, that's one rule that we are not allowed to break. Unfortunately, you're just going to have to wait and find out on your own. Hopefully, not for many years.
Well, it was worth a try. So what was it like to leave school and start working as an 11 or 12-year-old boy?
Honestly, not very unusual at all. It was very common practice during the time for young men to begin employment around those years, particularly in their family businesses.
So after sorting brooms, what was next?
Well, I was offered employment from a family we knew through the church. They were good friends of ours, the Whites. They ran a publishing business and offered me a position to become an errand boy to learn from them. Mr. White had seen my affinity for reading and decided I should have the opportunity. I was a voracious reader of any book I could put my hands on, particularly the sciences. That is how I primarily educated myself, due to not attending formal schooling.
What was it like being an errand boy? Were you able to learn the publishing business and progress?
Oh yes, it afforded me the chance to observe every aspect of the business. The Whites considered me as a protege. I was soon offered a title as Printer's Devil, in which I mixed tubs of ink or fetched type. It was truly an honor to follow in the footsteps of Benjamin Franklin or Walt Whitman. They too were once printer's devils. Soon after, I became an editor and then proofreader. It was wonderful.
What was it like to work for the Whites? How much did they influence who you became?
It was truly an incredible time. The Whites were an amazing family. Mrs. White was a researcher and a practitioner of many health-related topics. She was a truly remarkable woman. Did you know that she was struck in the face by a rock at age 9 and it changed her life forever?
No, I haven't heard of that. How so?
That was the catalyst that converted her to faith in Christ. She once told me that the sorrows of her early life turned her to heaven. At age 12, she became involved with the Millerite movement. She spent months filled with terror and feeling lost due to the guilt of her sins. She said the happiest times of her life began after her baptism at age 12, while she eagerly awaited the return of Jesus Christ. Her belief was so strong that Mr. White became enamored with her and was convinced that her visions of the return were true. They ended up marrying soon after. The Whites published many religious articles and articles on how to reform one's health. Mrs. White's strong recommendation for a vegetarian diet led to myself practicing the lifestyle as well. My relationship with Mr. White felt to be even closer than that of my father and I.
Weren't the Whites heavily involved with the founding of the Seventh-day Adventist denomination?
Yes, along with Misters Bates and Andrews.
Wow, so four people founded a movement that now has over 21 million adherents. I did a little bit of reading about the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Here are some neat facts about their movement and contributions. They have over 86,000 congregations. They run 198 hospitals and 133 nursing homes. They run the Adventist Development and Relief Agency, which provides for individual and community disaster relief. They operate 5,915 primary schools, 2,435 secondary schools, and 115 tertiary institutions with a total enrollment of 1,545,000, and then all kinds of other humanitarian and charitable relief organizations.
Wonderful. I'm glad to hear that they had such a lasting and wide-reaching impact.
Okay, so I'm assuming you didn't stay in the broom sorting business and publishing forever. So what happened next?
Well, I had a proclivity for teaching. So at age 16, I started instruction at a district school and then began attending university at age 20 to further teacher's training.
Wow. That's a young age to start teaching others. How long did you teach?
Unfortunately, Bob, it was not for long. My parents, along with the Whites, convinced me to start pursuing a medical education. I began with a 6-month course in New Jersey at the Hygieia Therapeutic College and then went on to the University of Michigan and NYU Medical College. I graduated with a medical degree at the age of 23.
Why did your family and close friends push you towards medicine?
The congregation had a goal of developing a group of trained physicians for their Adventist-inspired Western Health Reform Institute.
Oh, okay. So was it sort of a family business kind of arrangement?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, can you tell us how it went, working at the institute and beginning your career in medicine?
It was a wonderful experience. I became director of the facility very quickly, although I had been groomed for the position, and 1 year later renamed it to the Medical Surgical Sanitarium. I coined that term to suggest both hospital care and the importance of sanitation and personal health.
So you invented that term, sanitarium?
Yes, I believe I did.
How long did you direct your new sanitarium?
I led it until the time of my passing during the Second World War, on and off. My life pulled me in other directions throughout the years, as well as personal conflicts. However, I stayed involved with the facility for my entire life.
In which ways did life pull you?
Well, to begin, I was married to my beautiful wife Ella 2 years after rebranding the sanitarium. We led a full life and cared for many children, although we did not conceive our own.
I read that you fostered 42 children. Wow, that's quite a lot.
Yes, Bob. There were so many children in need. We had the means to help, and we loved having a full home. Ella and I even adopted 7 children as our own.
That was incredibly gracious. It must have been a lot of work. Why didn't you have children of your own?
Well, as I've mentioned, we held a very strong faith. It was a mutual decision to remain celibate in our marriage.
How did that work? Your entire marriage?
Yes, we never consummated. It was a very simple life. We slept in separate bedrooms, and it was not a necessity for our relationship. We had abundant love for each other and for the children in our care.
I see why you worked long hours and took on many projects in life to keep you busy. You're a better man than I am. Can we talk just a little bit more about your beliefs and how they mixed, seeing as how you became a man of science?
Absolutely. I don't think that faith or science have to be exclusive. This was a belief I held from a young age. I truly believed that there was a harmony between science and the Bible. Where one lacked explanation, the other provided.
Yes, and I actually love this quote from the book you wrote, The Living Temple. There is a clear, complete, satisfactory explanation of the most subtle, the most marvelous phenomena of nature. Namely, an infinite intelligence working out its purpose. God is the explanation of nature. Not a God outside of nature, but in nature, manifesting himself through and in all objects, movements, and varied phenomena of the universe. The tree does not create itself. A creative power is constantly going forward in it. Buds and leaves come forth from within the tree. So there is present in the tree a power which creates and maintains it. A tree maker in the tree. A flower maker in the flower. A divine architect who understands every law of proportion. An infinite artist who possesses a limitless power of expression and color and form. There is, in all the world about us, an infinite, divine, though invisible presence to which the unenlightened may be blind, but which is ever declaring itself by its ceaseless, beneficent activity.
You're listening to Health, Wealth, and a Taste of History with Bob and Tom. We'll be right back.
Now, how did these ideas influence your work?
Well, the direction and operation of the sanitarium was heavily influenced by my faith and the health principles of my congregation. We promoted a vegetarian diet, abstinence from alcohol and tobacco, and a regimen of exercise.
Wait, what? So no sex? And no smoking or drinking?
That is correct, Bob. If we're to have good health and a clear mind, we must follow these practices.
All right, then. Why a vegetarian diet?
For health purposes and to minimize excitement, sexual arousal, and masturbation.
Yeah. Who needs all that?
A vegetarian diet is simpler for the gut and can alleviate most illnesses. It is also a more plentiful and sustainable food supply, particularly nuts, a very underutilized food item. We use them heavily as we developed bland diets in our experimental kitchen and taught them in Ella's School of Cookery. Ella also used them in many recipes for her book, Science in the Kitchen.
Interesting. Can you elaborate on the link between diet and illness?
Bacteria present in the intestines can either be harmful or helpful to the body. Some can poison that blood and infect other tissues within the body. A well-balanced vegetarian diet favoring low protein, laxative, and high fiber foods is most beneficial to the health of the body. Some nutritional items can even be used to heal particular ailments. An exceptionally effective technique at treating conditions is the enema. We discovered that frequent use of an enema machine can assist in cleansing the bowels of harmful bacteria and toxins. This, followed by administration of yogurt, both through the mouth and by enema, will seed high-quality bacteria, promoting better health through providing a squeaky clean intestine.
What other practices were common for the betterment of one's health?
We promoted breathing exercises as well as mealtime marches that would aid in digestion. Also, phototherapy was a valuable tool in healing, utilizing sun baths.
Can you tell me if you had any patients that the listeners would recognize? That's not against doctor-patient privilege, is it?
Well, Bob, any of my patients would be deceased by now, so I do not think there will be objections. I did treat the 27th President of the United States, Mr. William Taft, Mr. Roald Amundsen, who was the first to lead an expedition to the South Pole. He was a very interesting fellow. Also, Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, and Sojourner Truth. She was a strong and wonderful woman. Also many others, including my second-rate competitor and former patient and kitchen staff, C.W. Post. I am sure we will discuss that thief later on in this interview.
Holy crap! That's a very impressive list. And yes, I very much want to get into the controversies later in your life.
Indeed it is. Time has made the list more impressive, as their accomplishments have gained more notoriety and led to greater change.
So, let's get more into the food. How did you decide to get into the food business, and what kind of products?
I started at the same time I became director of the sanitarium. My primary goal was to create items that would be simple to chew and digest. We discovered that starchy foods could be ground and baked to convert the starch into dextrin. We ground and boiled or steamed nuts in order to make them more digestible as well. My inspiration came from Sister White and Sylvester Graham. Mr. Graham is the gentleman that you may now know to have graham crackers named after him. Although, if he knew what graham crackers were today, he would be rolling in his grave. Mr. Graham lived a very similar lifestyle to me, and would not approve of the sugar crackers.
Oh, wow.
My first nutritional project was to create a softer breakfast item. Through much experimenting, I developed a dough that was made of wheat, oats, and corn. I baked the dough for a long duration at high temperature to break down or dextrinize the starch molecules in the grain. I named this product granula initially. It was after a short while of providing this to my sanitarium patients that we were entangled in legal troubles with a Mr. James Caleb Jackson, who already sold a product under that name. We resolved to change the name to granola instead, and founded the Sanitas Food Company. The company included Ella and my younger brother William, after granola began to have a following. We experimented with different processes and stumbled upon one by accident that was a truly happy occurrence. My brother and I argued over the details of who did what leading to this discovery. As we worked through our troubles, we began selling this granos. We continued to experiment with wheat, rice, and corn, and wound up with two big selling items, granos biscuits and granos flakes. It was at this point that my brother wanted to add sugar to our products. I would not agree to this unhealthy change, and Will started his own company against my advice.
Well, yeah, based on what you've talked about with a healthy diet and lifestyle, sugar wouldn't make any sense. Did you and your brother have a bad falling out because of all this? And did you ever recover your relationship?
Well, Bob, our relationship became very strained, and we had a feud that lasted several decades. Later in life, I wrote my brother a letter to mend our broken relationship. My secretary did not send the letter, however, as she thought I had demeaned myself in it. Will was not able to read the letter until after my passing.
Can we get into the relationship with your brother? What was it like over the years once your relationship became strained?
It was unfortunate that our business relationship soured our personal relations as well. As I have mentioned, we first started to separate around the time of the patenting of our flaked cereal. William believed that he was a more instrumental part and that he did not receive enough credit. As his resentment grew and we continued to disagree about the addition of unnecessary sugars to the recipe, he decided to split completely and form his own enterprise, the Battle Creek Toasted Corn Flake Company. This led to years and years of bitterness and even court battles between us. William trademarked the use of our surname and left me without the ability to claim it on any of my business endeavors.
Will went to those lengths? Where you couldn't even use your own last name on a business or products?
Yes, he did. He would come to use our surname as the name of his company over the years.
Wow, talk about brotherly love. So you basically became full-on competitors.
Yes, that is how it turned out for a long time.
Did you have any other competitive rivals?
Yes, Bob. The biggest of which was the aforementioned thief, C.W. Post. Even after assisting him with treatment of his mental breaks and his extended stay at my Battle Creek Sanitarium, the ingrate took it upon himself to steal my ideas and recipes.
What did he steal from you?
Firstly, the little worm opened his own sanitarium in Battle Creek after receiving curing treatments at mine. He named this forgery the La Vida Inn and took our practices as his own. Then, the thief took many of my recipes and founded his own company off of my hard-earned efforts, the Post Holdings Company. He started by imitating my breakfast cereal and malted nuts with postum and grape nuts. In 1906, he came out with Elijah's Manna. He later renamed the cornflakes imitation cereal to Post Toasties, partly because the British government refused to allow them to be sold in the United Kingdom, as they considered the name sacrilegious. It is not unfortunate that he later took his own life.
It really sounds like you weren't too fond of Post at all. Who do you hold more contempt for between Post and your brother Will?
Most certainly Post. William was just a poor, naive soul that craved success at any cost. He always felt as though he lived in my shadow, and that made him bitter of me. Even with his foundation, he felt the need to try to outdo his older brother. He did show to have a propensity for business, although it was at my expense.
Well, historians, if you haven't guessed it by now, my guest is none other than John Harvey Kellogg, the man responsible for countless inventions. He was the inventor of the breakfast cereal, peanut butter, and some of the first meat substitutes. He was a brilliant medical mind, holding several patents, and spearheading treatments that are still in use today. John wrote dozens of books about health and well-being and inspired generations to pursue a healthier lifestyle. John, I want to thank you for joining me and sharing your story with our listeners.
It has been a pleasure, Bob. I do believe it is time for me to bid you adieu, as I'm overstaying my welcome on this plane of existence. I hope to speak with you again.
Absolutely. Well, that's all we've got on this episode. I hope you enjoyed our interview and are spending safe, quality time with your families during this holiday season. Well, I have one more episode for you before Christmas, so make sure you keep following us on social media or wherever you go for podcasts. Stay safe and happy holidays. Till next time.
You've been listening to Health, Wealth, and a Taste of History with Bob and Tom.
That was radical.
The number one audio production for people with nothing better to do.
That was amazing.
For more info, head over to healthwealthandhistory.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time.